Today on Enduring Word with David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara.
When the sinner is in the depths of their sin, both in the practice of it and then in the consequences of it, they're really not themselves. Isn't that a beautiful thing to go to somebody who's in the depths of their sin? Maybe they're proud of their sin. Maybe they're flaunting their sin. But you can go to them and you can say, this isn't you. Even if you say you love this, you can say, this isn't you. You need to come to yourself. God has a higher calling and a higher purpose and a greater love for you than you even seem to have for yourself.
Often people have identity trouble when they're deeply lost in their sin. They think that's who they are. The truth is, your sin does not determine your identity, and the Lord is calling you to a much greater place. Pastor David will teach the journey of the prodigal son. After all his poor decisions, he finally thinks clearly. In that moment, he doesn't think he just needs a raise or needs to keep the pig pen cleaner for himself. He realized he had to go home. We'll learn the father's heart toward a child who returns to him. Now, here's Pastor David with part two of his message, Witness of the Lost.
Verse 11. Then he said, a certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. So he divided to them his livelihood. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. But when he had spent all, there arose a severe famine in the land, and he began to be in want. Then he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he would gladly have filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. A certain man had two sons. Now, in some ways, the dramatic part of this parable deals with the younger of the two sons. And the younger of the two sons is a remarkable story, as we'll see, and just as it unfolds before us. But don't you forget the other son. This is a parable about two sons, not just one. So remember that. Two sons, not just one. Okay, what do we know about this son? Well, the younger of the sons came, and verse 12 says that he came to the father, and he said, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. Father, give me. Give me something right here, right now. Now, in those days, it is said that this was permitted. It was permitted for a son to demand his inheritance before his father actually died. It wasn't customary. Normally, the inheritance was only divided after the death of the father, but this wasn't completely unheard of. And so Jesus' listeners go, okay, this is what he did. He asked for this, and it seems kind of cheeky. It's kind of bold for him to ask for it, but okay, I get it. He asked for it, and he receives it. And by the way, isn't it remarkable that the father gave it to him? Wouldn't it have been justified if the father would have said, no, I know you, son. You've got all these bad tendencies in you. If I give you this, you're just going to go out and waste it on prodigal living. By the way, do you even know what prodigal living is? I had to look the word up again in the dictionary, just for my own sake. Prodigal means, more than anything, wasteful excess. Just someone who spends unwisely, who just pours it out, who just has this idea of reckless, foolish, extravagant living. Now, the father could have said, no, I know you, son. You're going to go out and do this. But he said, no, son, I'll give it to you. And he gave it to him, allowing the son, at least what appears to us, to be absolutely free choice to do what he wanted to with the inheritance. So what did he do? Verse 13, he journeyed to a far country, and there he wasted his possessions with prodigal living. Man, it was clubs, it was parties, it was big expensive champagne, it was the whole nightclub scene, it was doing this, it was doing that, it was the fast cars. I don't know how much money he had, but he seemed to go through it pretty fast. And so after all that, great. And might we say, I don't think we're reading too much into the text today. It was probably a lot of fun while it lasted. There was probably a thrill. There was adrenaline rush. Woo, I can act like a big shot. People love me. Isn't it amazing how people love you when you got a lot of money you're throwing around? Oh, everybody loves me. I'm so popular. Isn't it great? And it's just everything's going one. He's riding high for that season. But notice this, verse 14. When he had spent all, there arose a famine in the land. Now, that's a bad combination of events. Number one, the famine only arose when he had spent it all. But then the famine arose. And I want you to notice something. You see, a lot of the calamity that came upon this prodigal son, it wasn't directly his fault. Did he cause the famine? No. The famine wasn't his fault. But his prodigal life left him in no condition to weather the storms that everybody else had to face. And that's really it. You know, sometimes we say to people, don't live this way, you'll ruin yourself, you'll ruin yourself. And in a sense, it's not so much often that people don't ruin themselves, it's just that the foundation and the structure of their life is so weak that when calamity comes upon them as it comes upon other people, they are crushed by it and they don't have any strength. There's a huge downturn in the economy. The stock market tanks and other people can survive. Sure, they take a big hit, but they survive. No, not you. Because you were unwise and you weren't trusting God. And look, it's all fell to pieces for you. You see what I'm talking about? The famine wasn't his fault, but it affected him all the same. And so he was completely to blame for his wasteful, foolish living. But he wasn't to blame for the famine at all. But then the hunger pains hit him. Verse 14 says that he began to be in want. And verse 15 says that they sent him into the fields to feed swine. He was driven by hunger. He was driven by need. And he accepted work that would be absolutely offensive, positively unacceptable to any Jewish man of that day. I mean, this is just something you didn't do. Not only did you not eat pork, but to feed swine, but to be right there with them. This was just absolutely offensive, disgusting work. I'm sure that when Jesus told this parable, first of all, I'm sure everybody was hanging on every word. And when Jesus said to feed swine, there was probably a, ooh, through the audience. Like, oh, really? Oh, that's gross. How disgusting it is. And then when Jesus said this in verse 16, I hope I'm not sounding overdramatic or melodramatic. But I wouldn't be surprised, that was when the Son of God himself spoke these words, if a tear didn't roll down somebody's cheek as they heard him. When he said in verse 16, no one gave him anything. That is alone. You are in the pig pen. You're in the mire of your own sin. You're paying the consequences. It's your fault. But part of it's not your fault. You didn't cause the famine, but you wasted the money. Part of it's not your fault. Part of it is your fault. All you know is you're in the pig pen. And when you're longing for the stuff that the pigs eat, you're in a pretty low spot. No one gave him anything. Verse 17. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have enough bread to eat and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. I tell you, in some ways, I think some of the most beautiful lines in this, there's so many beautiful lines, but this one, verse 17, but when he came to himself, you see, in his misery, the prodigal son was finally able to think clearly. Before, you could say that he wasn't really himself. Now, isn't that a sort of an exciting idea? That when the sinner is in the depths of their sin, both in the practice of it and then in the consequences of it, they're really not themselves. Isn't that a beautiful thing to go to somebody who's in the depths of their sin? Maybe they're proud of their sin. Maybe they're flaunting their sin. But you can go to them and you can say, this isn't you. Even if you say you love this, you can say, this isn't you. You need to come to yourself. God has a higher calling and a higher purpose and a greater love for you than you even seem to have for yourself. You want to seem to identify yourself purely by your sin. This is who I am. And God says, no, I think of you as something greater, something more wonderful. You are made in my image. And there you are, down in the pig pen, coveting what the pigs eat for their own food. You see, in his rebellion, in his disobedience, he wasn't himself. The prodigal wasn't the real man. The real man was the son who needed to go back to his father. Now, when he started to think clearly in the pig pen, did he start thinking like this? You know what? This pig pen's really dirty. I got to clean it up somehow. Did he think like this? You know what? I need to go to my master and ask for a raise. I don't even have money to feed myself. Did he start thinking of how to improve his conditions in the pig pen? No. When he started thinking, matter of fact, all that would be a sign he wasn't yet thinking clearly. When he started thinking clearly, what did he say? Home, Father. That was the mark of thinking clearly. That was the mark of sanity. And so he says in verse 18, I will arise and go to my father. I love that. He didn't say, I'll go to my village. He didn't say, I'll go to my home. He said, I want to go to my father. And that's where we need to lead people to. First and foremost, not to a church, not to a congregation, not even to a community. First and foremost, we lead them back to their heavenly father. And now, of course, we want to get attached to community. This idea of Christian community is very, very important. But first and foremost, people need to make their attachment to God, the Father in heaven. And this is what he was going to say. Did you see it there in verses 18 and 19? This was his old speech, prepared very well. Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you, and I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. It's a beautiful prayer of genuine contrition. I've sinned against heaven. Make me like one of your hired servants. By the way, did you see that phrase in verse 18? I have sinned against heaven and before you. That's a complete change of thinking. Do you think he thought that way when he was living high in his prodigal ways? No. But now he could see it. Now he could see the truth about it. If you were to come to him, Mr. Prodigal, there you are, between the nights at the clubs and the high-priced champagne and all the rest. Mr. Prodigal, here you are. Do you think you're sinning against God or man? What would he laugh at you? Sin. What do I care? Come on, man. The party's going on. It's fun. But now he's awakened. Now he realizes it. And he comes back to God, or to his father, and he wants to say this, make me like one of your hired servants. Now, please notice the contrast. When he said to God, to his father, I should say, give me, things got bad. There was a complete turnaround when he said this in verse 19. Father, make me like one of your hired servants. Isn't that a beautiful contrast? Now, some people have the first attitude towards God. God, give me, give me, give me, give me. Other people have the more proper attitude. Lord, make me, make me, make me. Transform me, shape me. All right. One other thing I want you to see before we get to sort of the sweetest part of the parable. I want you to see this, that when he was asking to be simply a hired servant, he was not asking to come into the family. In a household at that time, there were the children. Of course, they had status in the family. Then there were the regular slaves. And the regular slaves were actually sort of a part of the family. But then there were the day laborers, the hired servants, and they weren't part of the family at all. He's asking to come in at this level that's not even part of the family. Not even one of the servants that's really connected. Okay? Verse 20. And he arose and came to his father. Well, you know what? I just need to stop right there. Verse 20. You know what's so beautiful and powerful about that? Was he didn't just stop and think about it. I think that there's been a lot of prodigals who are there in the pig pen, so to speak. You know, I'm speaking according to the metaphor of this parable. But a lot of prodigals who are in the pig pen, and they think about it, don't they? They even formulate the speech in their mind. Yes, and they think about repentance, and they think about giving their life to God, and they think about doing exactly what they should do, responding to God in the proper way. And they think about it, and they think about it, and they think about it. But there comes a time where you got to stop thinking about it, and you got to do it. And for some people, that's a very scary jump. They get some comfort from just thinking about it. Sometimes we can replace doing something with just thinking about it. You know, I'm not going to go out and actually help people, but I'm going to think about it. I'm not actually going to go and repent before God and confess my sin before God and man. But you know, I'll think about it. And that doesn't cut it, does it? No, in some ways, the most glorious words of this parable, I think I've said that about three times already. Verse 20, where it says, I'll start again, and he arose and came to his father. But when he was still a great way off, his father saw him. It's like he had been looking, right? His father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet, and bring the fatted calf here and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. Oh, isn't that sweet? He goes back. He rises up. He goes back. And as he's still rehearsing the speech in his mind, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. See, his father sees him. And the father starts running towards him. Now, again, there are so many surprises in this parable. So many points where Jesus' original listeners would have gasped. They would have gasped at this. Because the father, who by this time obviously would have been an older man, I don't know, late 40s, 50s, whatever, he'd be an older, distinguished man. Those men in that culture, they did not run. I mean, not just because it might be difficult for them physically, but even if you could, it was considered undignified. You just didn't do that. Running was for children. You know, men moved at a leisurely pace, just adult men. That's what you did. And when Jesus said he ran, the angel would have gasped. He ran. And then when he came, can you imagine how the son felt? He's running out after me. Now, there are some people who think this. And all I can do is offer it as a suggestion. That in the parable, the reason why Jesus said that the father ran to the son was because there was such a culture of village identity and pride in that society that that man, having disgraced his father, having disgraced his family, having disgraced his village, that man could have been forcibly ejected from the village and prevented from ever coming in. And the father ran out to meet him so that nobody else could drive him away. And when he ran and he met the son, the only thing he could do is fall on his neck and kill him. I always laugh when I read that fall on his neck. I think of a wrestling move when I think fall on his neck, but it wasn't. He wrapped his arms around his neck. He kissed him. And by the way, the original is very emphatic. He repeatedly kissed him. He wouldn't stop kissing him. And then the son, through his tears, through his blusher, he remembers, I got a speech to repeat, don't I? I got something I got to say. And so he begins to say it through his tears. He says, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. And it's as if the father says, no, shh, shh, shh. Don't say anything. I know you've repented. You've come back. You've demonstrated. You would have never come back unless you've repented. He calls to the servants, come, bring the best robe. We're going to have a party. We're going to have the most amazing. Bring out the fatted calf, that one that we've been saving for the ultra special occasion. Bring that calf out. We're going to slaughter it, and we're going to have everything. Welcome home, son. Now, just imagine at the end of verse 24 when Jesus said that, aren't there people weeping listening to him? They're like, that's the most beautiful story I've ever heard in my life. It's just, yes. And can you imagine especially who was around him listening? The religious leaders, but so many sinners and tax collectors there. And Jesus is speaking to them, and they're like, that's me. I'm the prodigal. I'm the one. And you're saying that the Father wants to welcome me back into his kingdom. The father wants to bring me into home and wants to receive me as a son, not as a servant. And they're just weeping. They can't believe it. It's so beautiful. It's so powerful. It's so filled with the love of God. And then Jesus paused. A little dramatic embellishment here. I don't know if he did it. He paused. He cleared his throat. And then he talks about the second son. You forgot all about the second son, didn't you? The first son is so captivating, you forget about the second son. So here we go, verse 25. Now his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. Dancing? What's going on here? So he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, your brother has come home, and because he's received him safe and sound, your father has killed the fatted calf. But he was angry and would not go in. Therefore, his father came out and pleaded with him. So he answered and said to his father, "Lo, these many years I've been serving you. I've never transgressed your commandments at any time, and yet you never gave me a young goat that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this son of yours came, who has devoured your livelihood with harlots, you killed the fatted calf for him." And he said to him, "Son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. It was right that we should make merry and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found." There's the older brother out in the field. He's working. You know, in some sense, God bless that older brother. He's hard at work. He's faithful in the household, isn't he? Good on you for that, older brother. But when he hears that his younger brother is home and is not being treated with shame and contempt and probation and all the rest, when he hears about the joyful reception that's been given to his lost brother, what's his reaction? It says very plainly there in verse 28, "But he was angry and would not go in." I'm angry that he's been received, and I'm going to complain about it. And he says in verse 29 to the father, "You have never transgressed, and you never gave me." He was so unappreciative of all that he had. I like what Morrison said about this. He said, "Every day, the older brother had his father's company and the blessed society of home. His father's love was round him constantly, and everything that the father had was his. But what does he say to the father? You've never given me anything." So what does the father do? Verse 28 says, the father came out and pleaded with him. And verse 31 says, "Son, you are always with me." By the way, I want you to notice something. When he says son, actually in the ancient language, it's even more endearing. He calls him child. Child. It's a very warm, endearing word. You can just see the tears welling up in the eyes of the father. He's saying, "Son, I love you too. Please don't miss this. Please don't miss the love that the father had for the older child." It's pretty easy for us to just draw the lines. Well, yeah, you know, Jesus loved those sinners and tax collectors. Those religious leaders, man, he hated them. He loved to get in their face. No, he loved them too. And the father speaks to the older son with such endearment. "I love you. I'm always with you. I care about you. But please don't tell me that it's wrong for us to be happy that our son now has been brought home." You know, if you are or have been or know some prodigals, God loves them so much. The Father's heart is open wide towards them. And some of us know what it's like to have, in some measure or another, prodigal children of our own. It breaks our heart. But we know at least a small taste of this love, of this joy when they come back, when they do well. But don't miss this. It's not just the love for the prodigal. Maybe tonight I'm speaking to someone who's too religious. You're proud in your religiosity. You find it easy to look your nose down upon other people who aren't as spiritual as you are. I've got good news for you. The Father loves you too. And the Father looks at you with such a warm embrace and wants to draw you in to his presence as well. Let's all go to the Father's house and enjoy the party.
Thanks so much for joining us today for this edition of Enduring Word Radio. Over the years in Christian media, we've seen all sorts of misrepresentations about supporting ministries. Everything from give your last dollar to if you don't give, God's work won't be done. These sorts of manipulations are not biblical, and they do not represent God's heart for giving. Here at Enduring Word Radio, we want to run fast and far from these sorts of misrepresentations. That said, it's also important for us to be faithful to share with you the ongoing financial needs that we do have. Enduring Word Radio is heard all over the United States. The program that you listen to today was professionally produced, and purchasing time on some radio stations comes with a cost. So we want to be sure to at least inform you and ask that you seek the Lord about supporting Enduring Word Radio. There's a secure option to give right on the homepage of enduringword.com. You can give a one-time gift or partner with us on a monthly basis. Again, that secure option to support Enduring Word Radio is available at enduringword.com. In closing, our thoughts on ministry is where God guides, God provides. God is faithful, and He will continue to provide for Enduring Word Radio. Again, thanks so much for joining us today for Enduring Word Radio with Pastor David Guzik. It's our hope and prayer that today's message has been a blessing to you. Until next time, may God bless you and keep you.